All right. I want to wish a happy birthday to my mum, Eileen McMahon, from Trenta today. Lots of love from your favourite daughter, Karen. See you at the weekend. Okay. Karen's the favourite. Any other siblings of Ellen McMahon want to contest that claim? Happy birthday to you. Anne McDermott's in Maherbeg. Happy birthday from Margaret and Joe. They're sending their wishes, good wishes to you from... where is it from? From Burnfoot. Okay. Right. Now we're going to head to Wexford now because a major emergency was declared at Wexford General Hospital due to a fire in the hospital. The Wexford Fire Service was notified shortly before 4 p.m. yesterday. They got the fire under control pretty quick, and the Wexford Fire Service had a presence at the hospital overnight as a precaution. And we've heard that on the wider scale of things, the damage is not terribly extensive, but it is incredibly disruptive. Councillor George Lawler of Wexford County Council, in fact, the chair of it, the Cathaoirleach, joins us now. Good morning, George. Thanks for your time today.
Good morning, Greg.
I suppose in the first instance, thankfully, serious injury or injury or death, in fact, was avoided. And fair play to the emergency services and the staff in the hospital for how they reacted to ensure the former was the case.
Absolutely. Well, that's the remarkable statistic of this appalling situation that occurred in Wexford General Hospital yesterday. The notion or fact that no loss of life or no casualty or no injuries took place is quite remarkable given the scale of the fire. And whilst about a quarter of the hospital, I suppose, was affected by the actual fire itself, the impact is that half the beds in the hospital are actually affected by the fire, not just by the fire, but also obviously the water damage as a result of the emergency service, the fire services, Wexford County Council Fire Services, and their work, their gallant work in ensuring that this fire was brought under control in a matter of hours. There was quite extensive smoke damage also, but truly remarkable that we don't have any casualties as a result.
Yeah, when you start to learn of this, and I don't know how you did, perhaps you're the same as I, we start hearing that an emergency has been declared. We start seeing the images of bellowing smoke appearing on social media and what have you. We didn't know how it was going to play out. You've got a particular interest in this, George, don't you? I think your daughter works in the hospital. So how did you learn of this, and what was your sort of initial reaction?
Well, our office is at Wexford County Council is a couple hundred yards away from Wexford General Hospital. So we knew fairly quickly that we had a difficulty at the hospital. We didn't know the extent. I took the 2 minute stroll over to take a look, and I knew immediately that we were in quite some difficulty. Initially, just a number of the wards were evacuated, with patients being moved to another part of the hospital. But then just after 6 p.m. yesterday evening, the decision was taken by the hospital management and the HSE under a major emergency plan to evacuate the entire hospital, in excess of 200 patients, and there were 700 staff on duty. So obviously it was somewhat the logistical nightmare to ensure that all these patients were moved comfortably, speedily and efficiently and in a very safe manner. And I have to salute the emergency services, obviously the fire service of County Wexford, who performed remarkably, but also the staff of Wexford General Hospital and also the volunteer ambulance services from the likes of the Order of Malta, the Irish Red Cross, Wexford Civil Defence and some of the private ambulance providers. In fact, I was speaking with some of the volunteer people who came from all over the country, some of which served in the awful tragedy at Chrysla as well. So you can imagine the extent of the scale of the operation. Mm-hmm. We had at one stage in Wexford County Council, because we were in close proximity, we had over 100 ambulances on standby ready to be tasked, and they were indeed tasked to take the patients to various hospitals around the country. My own daughter ended up travelling, I believe, to Navan. I haven't spoken to her since last night, but she was on duty, on the night duty last night, and was travelling with patients. We had patients sent to Beaumont, St Vincent, Kilkenny, to Waterford, and further beyond. So it was a remarkable logistical nightmare that has seemed to have ran extremely efficiently. Mm-hmm. No,
George,
any
George,
or any
which is great. And that good news obviously is going to give way now to the reality moving forward in that Wexford Hospital, like all hospitals, it seems, in the country and those around it, already under significant pressure. Now, we've got a vital sort of cog here that has been removed for how long, we don't know yet. Of course, it's going to be all hands on deck, and the staff like your daughter doing amazing work to maintain patient safety and what have you. But we need to sort of now start to kick on as to when can this vital service be back up and running. That assessment, presumably ongoing, and hopefully in the near future, will be timelined.
Well, that is the immediate difficulty and problem that we have to address. Wexford is quite a large county, a population of about 165,000 people, one of the biggest counties and most populous counties in Leinster. The A&E, the ED service, and our hospital are a hugely vital cog, as you've said, in the community of Wexford and indeed beyond, serving up as far as the Wicklow border, right across the Kilkenny and Waterford border. So it's a hugely important piece of the healthcare jigsaw that we simply cannot do without. So we've already had talks with the Minister for Health, Stephen Donnelly, who has assured us of his support and knows the urgency. But you're correct when you say we now dust ourselves off and get back to ensuring that our services are put back in place as a matter of urgency, because we simply cannot do without it.
You have the same pressure on beds as we have here in Donegal. This
Absolutely.
Has brought back into focus the conversation about plans for an additional 90 beds. Are you encouraged by the soundings from the government? And of course, it's easy to talk. We'll see that they're going to employ measures to try and fast track the provision of these beds. So in other words, that when you bounce back, and you will, in the medium term, at the very least, you'll actually return, obviously the hospital will open before the new beds are provided, but with extra beds, extra capacity.
Well, we already had plans in place for a new 96-bed unit for Wexford General Hospital. And obviously, we need all those plans to be expedited alongside the reconstruction and reconfiguring of the service here in Wexford to ensure that what we have, we hold, but also we utilise this situation to ensure that our new 96-bed unit is an absolute must, and no greater need than now. As you know, hospitals right across the country are under tremendous strain, and the last thing they needed was an entire hospital to be effectively closed down to bring more pressure to bear on them. Mm. So this hospital has to be got back into use with a huge degree of urgency. And the soundings, and they're only soundings at the minute, but we need to bring pressure to bear to ensure that Wexford General Hospital and the reopening of is an absolute priority.
All right, listen, best wishes to you, your daughter as well, of course. She is putting in a shift, I'm sure, looking after her patients.
Absolutely.
But the rest of the crew there and all the emergency services, sending our love down. Thanks very much, George. Appreciate your time.
Thanks a million, Greg.
All right, that is Councillor George Lawler, who is Cathaoir Lough, Chair of Wexford County Council. Good morning, Stephanie. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning, Greg. Thanks for having me on your show this morning.
It's important, and we're going to try and get a resolution to this for you ASAP. We're working on it behind the scenes. But for the benefit of the listeners, tell us your mum's predicament she's in.
Right, okay. So my mum is 81 years of age. She lives on her own, and a couple of years ago she was diagnosed with a heart condition. She also has mobility issues, and she uses a walking frame. Now, her landline phone and internet has been out of order for the last 2 weeks, and she has no way of contacting family members or emergency services in the event of an emergency.
This is her lifeline to the outside world, to her family, as you say, in the event that she needs the emergency services. And I know what this is like with my own father. When he didn't have access to the phone for not a dissimilar reason, it was very distressing.
Yes. Greg, I came home from work yesterday, and my mother was extremely upset. And to be honest, we have to date, first of all, we reported the phone to Vodafone on the 17th of February. And on that day, I was assured that because of her medical conditions, the case would be marked as high priority. So to date, she has received 11 texts, the most recent yesterday. And it says, please be patient. We are looking into this, and we hope to get it sorted within the next 10 working days.
Wow.
Which, as you can understand, Greg, that brings us up to the 14th of March, which is nearly a month since I first reported it.
Right. And she is presumably afraid to leave the house either in case someone from Vodafone lands to fix the problem.
Yes. So she was told an engineer would call yesterday and she sat in all day and he was a no-show. So, like, she was extremely frustrated and she just feels like all the family members here, we all work. So mum spends a good part of the day on her own. So, do you know what I mean? She's feeling very isolated and she obviously uses her phone to ring family members, the internet to watch mass because she's not set every day to go to mass. So, you know, she uses the phone to watch mass and to contact family members that are overseas.
Yeah. Okay. Well, listen, as I say, Stephanie, we are making every effort that we can to get this resolved as soon as possible. And I hope there's some success.
Yeah.
Someone within Vodafone needs to take control of this situation because this is a lady, 81 years of age. She's independent, living on her own, but her phone is her, it's her emergency line if that should be needed, but it's her access to you and the rest of the family. She's sitting in the house waiting on an engineer to arrive. She's been fobbed off with texts. That's the only way I could describe it. And her most recent text yesterday, giving a 10-day commitment, simply not good enough. And we just hope we're going to try and get through to the right person in Vodafone to get this sorted ASAP. 20 years she's been with the company. That's brand loyalty, if I've ever heard of it. So if that should be reason alone, let alone everything else that's going on.
And Greg, she also has a sick relative as well. Like, and you know, she uses Messenger to contact this relative, and she hasn't been able to do that. And that's quite upsetting and quite frustrating as well. So I'm hoping, you know, and I'm most grateful for you for giving us this airtime this morning as well.
Well, I'll only be happy if we get it sorted, Stephanie. You know what I mean? That's what.
Yes.
We're not here just to sort of platform it. We want to get it sorted.
No, I did get a message from a sales representative that's actually from Vodafone that was in the Mavalera yesterday, and he said he will call to see my mother today. But he doesn't fix phones, but he said he would hate to see his parents in a similar situation. So he said he would see if what he could do as regards maybe hurrying things on for.
Well, between the jigs and the reels, we should get it sorted then ASAP, Stephanie. Listen, thank you. Best wishes to your mum as well. Thanks very much for your time.
Thank you very much,
bye-bye,
Greg. Thank
Stephanie.
You. Okay,
thank you. All right. As I say, there's a few people working on that now. We hope to bring that to a resolution. Hi, Greg. You're really not getting it about the hospital situation. I was in hospital 10 days ago for operations and 2 days later had to go back. I spent 2 nights on a chair in A&E, then readmitted. I'd spent 8 hours in A&E, told 100 waiting to be seen with 4 ambulances outside, the place full of refugees. If we can't look after our own, for God's sakes, why take thousands more people in? I'm a farmer and I've just enough room for what I have in the shed. I'm going to go to the mart and buy more in. That's just calling a spade a spade. Anything happy to big boys in government that would be on a chair 2 night in A&E with fault because we're putting up with it. Okay, I'm not here to campaign to make you change your mind. That's your experience and I get that, right? But I sat for 12 hours in A&E 4 years ago, 5 years ago. I've been on this show now unbelievably for much longer than I thought, long before the refugees that you talk of were here. And I've heard horror stories all over those years. I'm not saying things haven't been exacerbated. That's why they're saying Donegal is full. Our services can't take any more. But these are not new problems. And I'm really sorry for what you had to go through. If you have more people, it's going to make things more difficult. I imagine that's the case. I get that, okay? And I understand. But we're not disagreeing. We're not disagreeing, I don't think. Greg, could you ask Dorothy if she has any powers of persuasion with the GEA to facilitate older people getting out to matches as they feel able by restoring the cash option at the gate? Again, I don't know. Did we get any response from the council on that? I'm not really quite sure. Not the council, the GEA. I remember the time a 9-year-old meal could save you from getting COVID and not buying children's clothes. Yeah, indeed. I remember slipping in under yellow tape in Dunn's to not steal because I paid for them. For pyjamas for a kid, you know what I mean? That's fine. It was never about protecting from COVID. It was to discourage you from going out at all in the first place. But anyway, there's a look back ongoing now too, isn't there? Hi, Greg. I agree with most of what you say. But really, let's not kid ourselves. The money may be coming from Europe. Well, it's not. In fairness, we're budgeting. Some of it is, but we're budgeting most of it here. But who's going to end up paying for it? Plus, I sincerely believe anyone who arrived here who lost their paperwork between getting off the airplane and customs offices should be sent back on the plane they arrived. I get that. I think there's a general consensus that there's something is amiss there. Listen, most of the money now is coming from the Exchequer, not from Europe. But yeah, okay, I appreciate your point. Right, some of you have been sending in some nice comments about your customer experiences. And I'll get to those separately to this, all right? But I want to introduce our next guest, who is Julie Gorman. Hiya, Julie. Lovely to see you. Thank you so much for calling in. How are you keeping?
Thank you. I'm doing great.
How are you feeling?
Amazing. Brilliant. A new woman.
Okay. Yeah, a new woman. So, this is all down to weight loss for you.
Weight loss, yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
Talk to us about your situation. Are you happy to talk about weights?
Oh, yeah.
Actual weights?
Yeah.
Not everyone is, but you're okay to do that. Right, so what weight were you? How was it impacting your life? Why did you want to change things?
At my heaviest, last January, I was 18.2.
Okay.
Which was way too heavy for me.
How was that affecting your life?
I was miserable.
Yeah.
I never really spoke to anybody about this. You know, nobody really knew how I felt, but I was... thought about it from I first woke in the morning. It was my last thought at night. I just felt horrible.
And would people around you have realised that you felt like that, or did you put a sunny side out?
No, I'm fairly always happy and smiling, so they probably didn't realise, but I was miserable.
But when you were on your own...
Yeah, it was always there in your head. You think, well, I thought, you know, do people look at me and thank God she's so heavy? You know?
Yeah, of course.
And did they have a bad opinion on you because you were so heavy, you know, things like that.
And those same
stupid
thoughts
stuff
get running
people,
around in your
people
head
wouldn't
the time.
Be thinking that, you know.
Physically, how was things?
I wasn't too bad. I would have been going to the gym. You know, I always lost weight, put it back on. I couldn't sustain it. I couldn't keep the weight off. So I loved going to the gym. I still would have been fit even when I was heavy. Mm. People were always surprised by how much I could do, you know.
Yeah. So you had a good... strength, good cardiovascular.
Oh, good. Yeah. Definitely. I would have spent a lot of time in G8 Fitness,
mm-hmm.
Where I gained a lot of experience, and I still carry that experience, whether it's nutrition or from, you know, I would have lifted weights with them mainly was my thing. So I can still carry that now. I can go to the gym. I don't go as often as I would like to go.
You go more than me.
Yeah.
I'd love to get into a routine like that. So would you say that you weight yo-yoed then? Is that,
my weight yo-yoed,
Again, anything I ask, it's only what you're comfortable answering, mm-hmm. Julie. But then what was the reason for your weight gain? Like, is it what you were consuming versus your exercise?
When I was younger, I was never heavy. I think once I had children, I gave up smoking and I was a stay-at-home mum. My diet was just terrible.
Perfect storm, really, wasn't it? With everything that's going on.
Yeah.
Because you're running around looking after everybody else. And I guess
not eating the proper meals, you know, snacking on rubbish and just things like that.
Yeah. And did it bother you in terms of, you know, if there was an event on?
Oh,
what
definitely.
You might wear? Is that
definitely,
what it really would be?
Yeah. It was a case of you'd have to go shopping. That was a big thing.
Yeah.
And I could never go shopping for what I wanted. It was what fitted me, what would hide my weight.
Yeah, so in every element of your life, it's always there then. It
always
kind of everything's
there.
Framed
Everything,
through this prism of how you feel about yourself.
And I tried for years, you know, this going down the route for the surgery was a huge ordeal for me.
Because you're not good with needles. And
I'm no good with nothing.
I'm using that as a sort of a catch-all.
I'm a real bad patient.
Right, okay. You'd avoid the GP like the plague.
Oh, avoided the GP. Even with my pregnancies, they had to ring me to come on and get bloods. I would have avoided it.
Well, we're more similar than that in that way than our gym going.
Anything to do with the hospital at all. I'll never forget, you know, walking down to theatre that day. Like I was ready to
Well, let's not get
turn.
There yet. Let's see how you got there. Because I want to know what was the tipping point for you? Like, because I presume you were starting to Google all types of options, different, you know, stuff you could consume, blah. But then eventually you're going to start hitting on and you maybe heard interviews or read something about
TikTok.
TikTok or the gastric band or whatever.
Yeah.
So at what point did you sort of get into your head, right, okay, I may be now prepared to go down the surgery route?
Me and my friend actually at work, a colleague at work, Deirdre, was talking about it. A sister, I think it was a sister of hers or something, maybe someone was discussing doing it. And I thought, maybe that's an option for me, you know. I thought maybe this is something I should look into. Mm. And then, of course, you go on TikTok and you start looking at these videos. And then that's all was in my feed then because I had researched
it. Yeah. And this is the dramatic transformations,
yeah.
Isn't it?
Okay, oh, yeah. Huge. People that have gone to Turkey. And
people much heavier than your 18 stone.
Yes. Oh, stone. Definitely. Yeah. So I spoke with my GP. Mm. And my GP recommended Dr. Bodner and Letterkenny.
Was your GP content that you were a candidate for this?
Oh, yes. You had to be a certain weight and I think possibly a certain BMI. Mm-hmm. And I just spoke to her about my worries and my concerns, you know, the fear of going under the knife. And she said, like, strokes and heart attacks run and my father's side, you know. So as she said, the positives outweigh the negatives.
There are negatives, but we have to look at what's best for you. So you were referred then to whom?
I was referred up to Dr. Bodner. Mm-hmm. I know he has been on here. I listened to him on here before. And she said he was one of the best, if not the best. Mm-hmm. I knew then that he was the man for me.
Yeah.
Like going to Turkey was never an option for me.
No, and he's
was too
about
scared.
That because often he ends up... No, I'm not saying it's not...
Fair play to people for doing it. You know, it takes a lot of courage to go out to another country to
but
do
it's
that.
The aftercare.
The aftercare. Stuff, I have him here now and he's just a phone call away.
Right. So after your GP, then your referral... Mm-hmm. He's saying, right, this could work.
Yeah,
really well
I went
for you.
To him initially. I thought I was going to get a sleeve, but he spoke to me about my diet, what my eating pattern was, and he recommended the bypass. Mm-hmm. I had to then go and consult with a psychiatrist. So there was a procedure to follow. Mm-hmm. It wasn't just a case of, you know.
Yeah, so now the bypass, what actually happens in through the bypass?
The bypass is where they close off. I probably not explained it as well as he could. They close off my old stomach and he created me a new pouch, probably about the size of the palm of my hand. And he reattached all my intestines and my bowel to this new stomach, which is amazing.
So for someone who's not really a big fan of the white coat, that's a horrific conversation to hear.
It really was.
It was coupled with the reassurance of what this would mean to you as well, of course.
I knew there was a good ending.
Yeah,
you know,
exactly.
And how it would make me feel.
So you went through the evaluation to make sure that, you know, this was the right thing for you and all that type of stuff. How long then after, did you do this publicly or privately? Do you mind me asking
privately.
That? Okay, right.
Privately.
So it's going to be a little bit quicker. Mm-hmm. So then how soon after?
It was about a year because of COVID. I probably would have gotten quicker, but because of COVID, he wasn't getting as much access to theatre because of COVID.
Of course, yeah. And on the day of the operation then, or in the lead up to it, was it excitement, fear?
No, fear. I told hardly anybody.
Yeah.
I was afraid I would back out. Mm-hmm. You know, I was afraid this day will come and I'm going to cancel, I'll not go. So I was like, I'm telling nobody. And my brother has a priest in the family, Father Stephen. I didn't even tell him, but at 7, I think it was around 7 o'clock that morning when I was sitting there prepped for theatre, I was like, I'm texting Father Stephen to pray for me. No, I was so scared.
Talk about internalising things.
Oh, I was scared. I was so scared.
I think he'd have been my first port of call.
Yeah, I know.
But you faced your fears.
Faced my fears,
you were, even I would say, as you were approaching theatre, you were ready to do
turn
the Yumi.
And run, yeah. The nurses that did my pre-op, like, I have a clean bill of health. I wasn't on any medication. I had nothing wrong with me. I was a perfect candidate. Mm. They couldn't get over, like, they were like, you're the perfect patient. Like, you don't take this, you don't take this. So we're going over this paperwork. And then I seen her coming with this trolley. And I says, are you coming to do bloods? She says, I am, yeah. I said, oh, I might faint. She says, I knew you were too good to be true. Yeah. But
well,
I didn't
anyway,
faint.
You didn't. No. You didn't. And you went in, when you come out of surgery, how long were you in surgery?
I was in surgery for 4 hours and recovery for about four hours.
Right, okay. So then when you awoke, obviously a bit sore.
I actually wasn't too bad.
Right.
Amazing. I don't know how I wasn't as sore as I was. I wasn't too bad.
And do they have to, I don't know how to phrase this without upsetting anyone, is it done through a small incision? Is it quite
six puncture wounds.
Okay.
So I watched the video, of course, before I went on of how it was done.
You're a sucker for punishment, I'll tell you that for nothing. But anyway, you still went ahead with it.
Yeah.
So then in terms of recovery, how long did you be in hospital for?
I had my surgery on the 12th of September on the Monday, and I came home on the Wednesday.
Now, in terms of your diet, you can't go straight into solids and stuff.
No, it's like a new baby, yeah. Really. I had 3 weeks of fluids only, mm-hmm. and I then had another few weeks of pureed and another few weeks of soft, and then gradually...
Small bits.
Yeah.
How difficult was that?
It was fine because I wasn't hungry. I haven't been hungry since I've had my operation.
Yeah, because so, your stomach is so small, mm-hmm. that your mind is convinced that you're full.
It was like a light switch when I had my operation. It was like all the cravings for sugar, crisps.
Did that feel weird? Did you feel almost like a different person?
Yeah, I'm like a different person. Oh, yeah. That's what I say.
Because
I'm not sure
every day how conscious we are of our cravings.
Yeah.
Do you know, like you eat... but do you really think how hungry you are? Do you really, you know, you think, God, I'd love a bit of chocolate, but do you really think that much about it? Maybe the absence of those.
I think it's in the head. Yeah, it's all in your head.
It's the absence of those cravings that might
be more
noticeable.
It's all portion control now for me, you know, eating up a side plate. And
I was listening to, and we'll talk more about the recovery and stuff. I was listening to, I think it was Lifeline or something, where people were talking, they were trying to discourage people from this kind of operation. And a couple of the people were, this is probably their own research, and I don't mean this in any way nasty towards them, but they were peed off because they could no longer eat the foods that they enjoyed.
But
I would have thought that that's part of the process.
That's it.
Here.
You have to get your head around it before you have the operation.
You have to understand that you're not going to be able to eat ever like you did before. You
not
can't
at all.
Finish a plate now.
No.
Because you simply don't have the capacity for it.
I don't know if you could probably make yourself. Some people say they could make themselves, but you'd be sick after it. Like, I know when I've had enough, I eat slow, I'd get a pain.
And one of the people was saying, you know, even though that she started drinking Coke because the Coke expands the stomach, so she could consume. And I thought, well,
I thought that's why
she went through the whole operation to begin with. You know? So my point being is that I think you need to be really clear in advance. I don't think you can do enough research as to how your life changes. It's not just how you might lose the weight, but how in terms of drinking and eating and socialising and what have you. So if you went out for a meal now, do you eat a starter instead of a main, or what way does that work?
I would eat a starter or I have a kid's meal.
Do you enjoy it though?
The food? I can't even eat a full kid's meal.
Yeah.
You know, I probably couldn't eat a full starter.
For some people that might feel weird.
It is it's a bit daunting. It is. I haven't been out for meals a lot.
Mm. We're also bloody busy with everything that's going on.
But like we're used to going out for meals and going for a few drinks. They tell you to stay away from alcohol for a while. So I haven't really had any alcohol.
So how long is it since you've had the operation?
It will be 6 months now on the 12th of March.
Okay, so really recently.
Really recent. So it's a learning curve for me now.
Yeah, for sure, exactly. So then how quickly do you start losing weight? Obviously your diet was drastically changed post-operation, so there's going to be, you probably lose a stone if you did that diet without any operation.
You would. My first week I lost 18 pounds.
Yeah, that's a massive.
No, I couldn't believe it, but I knew myself even before I weighed myself that week that I had, there was a dramatic change.
And
in
then
me.
From then over the next 6 months, does it slow down a little?
I lose, some weeks it could be 3 pounds, some weeks it could be 1 pound, some weeks it could be 4 pounds, but I'm gradually now pound to £2 a week, sometimes £3 a week.
So what then, where do you settle, how do you settle at a weight then, right? Because obviously it all depends on how much you consume versus how much you burn, right?
Yeah.
You don't want to fade away into nothing
either. No, I don't, yeah.
So is your stomach of a size where you will hit a weight that you'll maintain? Or how does that work?
I think you can lose weight from 12 to 18 months, I think, so... I have another while to go.
Yeah.
I was hoping to lose 6 stone, so I'm not far off. Yeah. Well, I'm a pound off 5 stone now.
Okay.
So.
And how do you feel?
Amazing, like a new woman.
Yeah?
You know, my husband got his wife back. My kids got their mum back.
You got yourself back?
I got myself back.
Let's start with you.
Yeah, yeah. Just, you know, a different person.
Typical. And dare I say, of woman, and I mean this in a lovely way, that you go to your husband, you go to your family.
Yeah. He was saying, make sure you mention me. I was like, I'm not even going to say I have a husband.
Your current husband. Come here. Because what happens is you can't be a good at anything until you feel good.
You have to
so
feel
you,
good
you
yourself.
You have to get yourself back.
Yeah.
And then you can be all the things other people, can't you?
It's just great going into a shop and seeing a dress and saying, I like that, and trying it on, and it fits. You don't have to say, God, is there stretch on that? Will that fit my body? You know, It's a great feeling.
What are the negatives then? What are the negatives in terms? I mean, is it how you eat now, or like? Obviously the positives are right there,
yeah.
And you've got a certain attitude whereby obviously the positives far outweigh the negatives, and that's how you are happy and you move forward. Other people, their personality might be that even though the negatives are much smaller than the positives, that they focus on those,
and that's why
you have the evaluation. So, what would you see as the negatives?
I have no negatives.
Nothing.
None. My only one regret. Is that I didn't do
it
10 years ago.
Yeah.
That's my only regret. I had no negatives at all for me. Because I'm quite happy. Like, I can have an odd biscuit, which I do have, a very small biscuit. And if I can have one biscuit, in a couple of days or something like that, I'm quite happy. That's the way I have to be now, and I understand that.
Yeah. So what have you eaten today so far?
I had a half a slice of toast.
Right. And what will you have for lunch?
I'd probably have an egg, or I'll try and get some protein into me. You know, it's all about eating the right foods now, where my body's going to get the nutrients.
I'm on vitamins.
I'll have to take them for life.
Okay, so that will be because you can't consume enough of what has snapped. Right, okay. So then the evening meal, what might you have?
Evening meal, stews and soups and things like that. Just sit better with me.
But you can't have a cup of tea at 6 and dinner at 7, I presume.
No, I can, I just can't eat and drink at the one time. Because if I eat and drink at the one time, it pushes the food down through too fast, then I don't get the nutrients from it.
Yeah.
So that's the idea of that.
Is this new stomach of yours now your new stomach? In other words, at some point, do they reverse this or make it bigger?
No,
or?
It stays the... If I was sick or something, it can be reversed. So that's why I like the idea of the bypass. The sleeve, they take away your stomach. Whereas say if something happened to me, I was very sick.
The thing with the sleeve as well too is that, and presumably is this ongoing sort of maintenance there, monthly maintenance and what have you, I think. I don't want to mislead anyone, but that was what I remember from previous conversation. Like, in other words, unless, you know, obviously there'll be some routine checks and all that, but you're finished with the doctor now, are you?
I still be called up to see Dr. Bodner. I was with him just before Christmas, and he is going to call me back in the new year. But I have no complaints. So, you know, I have to go and get B12 injections every 3 months. And I'll probably have to get my bloods done now. I'll probably have to get regular checks with my bloods to make sure.
But again, this is not just simply about how you feel you might look. You talked of the family history of heart disease and of stroke. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean? So to better insulate from that versus an injection every 3 months, these are all the balances.
That's it.
Put those headphones on if you don't mind. Freddie's with us. I want to come back to you in a second and we'll actually name your husband so he's not disappointed. Freddie, you had this operation, did you?
I did that at Tina twice. I had it done 6 years ago in Belgium.
Right.
And then I lost about 12 stone, me and Kevin Bradley.
Wow, 12 stone.
And then when I came back, then my bowel was causing me problems.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the tail end of your bowel is only supposed to be 1.5 metres, but mine was 3. So there last year, just a week before July, I got 8 metres of my intestine removed.
Wow. And why was your intestine so long, Freddie?
Because when they do it over there, it's a kind of relevant, like a 10-year research on it, they've caught on this is kind of a problem. What they're doing is one fits all. Like, everybody's intestine in different sizes. Yours could be 6 metres, mine's could be 12 metres, somebody else could be 8 metres. What they were doing, they just say 1.5, 1.5, and that was it. They never measured the tail end of where Dr. Baltimore, he measures the tail end of it and makes sure it hits right, and then he works from there on in. Full size now.
I mean, obviously, listen, you've lost 12 stone and hopefully you feel great now, I think. Freddie, you went over to Belgium. It was the right decision at that time. Do you wish you had got it done locally, or was that not an option for you? Or what's your feelings about travelling to get this done?
I already went to Galway to get it done. And the Galway, I was nothing but loopholes from start to finish. Like, they wanted me to go on a milk diet for 6 months to travel every second week to get that weight. Just to get weighed.
And was that in the public system, or were you prepared to go private at that point?
No, it was private.
Right, okay.
The guy was over 28 stone.
My word.
And my wife just died and all, and I had a good mammy and daddy, so it was, you know, she died with suicide, so it was tight going, you know, so I had to do something then at that stage, so That's why I went to Belgium. Kevin Bradley went first.
You had to move things along, didn't you? Wow, life really smacked you in the face there. There was a real reality check that you had to get yourself in order as well as everything else.
Yeah, but that Dr. Bum was unreal in their Kenny General Hospital.
Freddie, how are you now?
I'm good.
Okay, well done. And you feel good. You've had that second operation. And how do you find your diet and eating and stuff, Freddie?
Believe it or not, I can eat not too bad. Maybe eat too much.
Yeah, all right. Well,
too much.
Yes. But are you you've able to, for the most part, maintain the sort of the loss of the, what should we call it, dangerous weight that you were carrying?
Yep, I did put on a couple of, 2 or 3 stone again, but that was kind of my own fault, more or less, trying sampling different foods, and then I kind of liked them where I should have just stayed away from them. Mm-hmm. You know, I kind of like. Yeah.
It does require a bit of discipline as well. Listen, Freddie, fair play to you. You're an amazing man for everything that you've done, and not just for yourself, but your family as well. So well done to you, and thanks so much. And I hope continued good health and happiness for you, Freddie. And I mean that from the bottom of my heart.
And I like to congratulate Julie there. She's doing speaking to her a couple of weeks ago there, and she's doing marvellous.
Isn't she?
Yeah. Brilliant. Fair play to her.
Yeah, indeed. All right. Waltzed into the studio, she did. Take care, Freddie. All right.
No more.
Bye. Okay. Good man, Freddie. All right. It's amazing what we have to go through at times, isn't it?
It is, yeah.
Does that milk diet stuff
resonate
with
you? Never
heard of it. No. I don't know what the story was there. Maybe it was because of his size.
Maybe, possibly, yeah.
Another human on top of you at 18 stone.
Yeah.
Right, you're happy now?
Very.
What's the husband's name?
Sammy. He feels like he has a new wife. How lucky is he?
Is he getting much sleep? No, I'm only joking. Put your headphones back on. And less of that chat, Julie and Sammy. Behave yourselves. Right, Marie, how are you getting on? Good morning to you.
Good morning, Greg. How are you?
I'm doing fantastic, Marie.
Good. I was up with you there about 2, maybe 3 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
I was in the studio.
I remember.
I have 10 stone off. And amazing. I couldn't recommend Dr. Bodner. He's a mighty man. Mm-hmm. He is definitely, he's changed my life.
Yeah. And I think, too, what's important about the language he uses is that he talks of obesity as a disease.
It is.
You know, a disease like other diseases that we have, rather than it being you like your food, you spoil yourself, you can't say no. He recognises, and he wants the medical fraternity to recognise this as the disease that it is, Marie, and you went in for treatment of your disease.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. I had diabetes as well. I was insulin dependent. And now I'm on tablets.
And how are you feeling?
Great. Like a new woman.
Don't tell Sammy.
For Sammy.
And yeah, I know, but you're listening. He wanted a mention, you know. You shouldn't have said it. Now he's getting a mention. And Marie, have you found sort of like your forever weight? Does it feel like that, Marie? Or do you still have to keep your checks and balances in, Marie?
Oh, you have to keep your checks and balances in. My weight would go up and down there at times, maybe a few pound on, a few pound off.
Yeah.
You know, it's on and off. It's just not steady.
But it's easier for you to control. You don't feel it's going to run away on you.
No, you feel like you're in control, yeah.
Yeah, and you're 10 years in, so, you know, I mean, that's, 6 years in. Sorry, I mixed the stones up with the years. 6 years is a long time, 10 stone off. Listen, Julie, and you're feeling good, your medication has been reduced, and presumably feel better, much more optimistic about everything in life, Marie.
Yes, definitely.
Any tips for Julie now? She's here, you're a veteran now, a 6-year veteran, mm-hmm. She's 6 months in.
Just watch your diet.
Yeah.
Watch what you're eating and make sure you eat.
Yeah.
Make sure you eat.
There is days that I would feel that I'm not hungry, but you have to eat.
Mm-hmm.
You have to eat.
Yeah.
I was very bad at the beginning, when you're going through the diet. You know, afterwards, I couldn't eat. I had no desire for food.
But then you're going to feel lethargic, lightheaded, okay. Great advice, Marie, and continued good health to you, and thanks for talking to us.
Thank you.
All right, take care. Julie, nice to get the two calls
from
the
feedback from people.
Yeah, exactly. You, I think you're already getting to set yourself into a routine of knowing what you have to do. Yeah. To, you seemed already very conscious of that in talks of the eggs and stuff. Yeah. But even if you're not hungry, get it into
Try and get something, even if it is only an egg on its own, you know.
Yeah. So what's your feelings now that you're feeling great about yourself? Are you going to... Are you going to run a marathon or something now?
No,
do you know
definitely. What? I always say, if you see me running, you run too, because there's something chasing me. I'm not a runner, but right. I try to get to the gym. It's very hard with work and family life to get to the gym.
Yeah.
But I just like going myself, put the headphones on and lift the weights.
And
you know?
Still settling into the new you, too,
that's
I presume,
it, yeah,
you?
Yeah.
Do you find your energy levels have improved?
Oh, massively improved, yeah. I can get up so early now in the morning. You're not feeling that slump.
Yeah. And you know? Some of that is going to be the weight loss and some of that's going to be feeling better about yourself.
Like I was carrying another person, you know, and a wee toddler about with me on my back every day, you know, yeah.
Yeah, okay. Anything you want to add, Julie, before we go, or do you feel we've touched on everything? I mean,
no, I'm happy enough.
Is it very expensive? I hate to ask, but because, you know, it's going to be different things for different folks.
It's €11,000, which I was prepared to pay, but my health insurance covered it.
Did it really?
Yeah. I didn't know that until after.
£11,000 is a lot of money.
You save it on takeaways after.
Well, that's it. And you think of what car you would get for £11,000.
Yeah, a lot of money, but so worth it.
It wouldn't be, you know, like, And not everyone has access to that or the lines of credit, but bloody hell if you did. As you say, you save then over time.
Dr. Bodner saved my life. You know, he's... just fantastic at what he does.
Yeah.
He's just amazing.
And it's great for you. And as we've mentioned, we had a wee joke about Sam, but it's great for your whole family.
Yeah, and I had huge support from my family. And that's
what
the big...
What age are your young ones?
12, 15, 18 and 20.
Wow, okay. Yeah. Right, okay. So
there's three boys and a girl. And the three boys now, they always try and gang up on me now because I'm smaller and I'm not as strong, you know.
But I would say too, they're of an age where they can be nice and supportive. Brilliant stuff. Well, listen, Julie, it's an amazing story. Just a pound or two off 5 stone, and still going. You're early doors in it, but we've heard some really encouraging words there from our guests, Julie and
Donna.
Freddie as well.
Yeah,
Marie and Freddie.
Yeah,
and your Julie.
Yeah.
So that's encouraging because they're quite a bit down the line. And are you prepared to sort of say? Would you say, look, if you're going to do it local?
I was just definitely. And anyone sitting on the fence, I would tell them to go and do it. It will change their life. You know, if they're like me and they're stuck and they lose and they put it back on, I just couldn't keep it off. I just couldn't do it. I tried everything to go and do it. And anybody that wants to contact me, I've had people contact me from my post on Facebook, the people that I don't know. If anybody wants to talk about it, they feel free to message me.
I think really a lot of this is that because, you know, maybe it's not the way you were before. I don't know, but this has made such a difference to you that you want to, if you can,
help
someone else to feel like you do.
Because I spoke with two local people before I had my operation. It was great to have them to speak to.
Yeah.
You know, and they recovered okay. My biggest fear was that I wouldn't recover from the operation, that I would be sick after the operation. Mm. That was my biggest fear.
Yeah.
And I only took pain relief in the hospital.
Yeah.
The minute I came home, I took nothing.
But a lot of those fears were your personality traits, really. Yeah. They would have there. They would might have been there if you're going to get a wisdom tooth out.
Yes.
As well. Do you know that sort of way? So, yeah. Listen, Julie, it's been it's a lovely story. It's an inspirational story.
Thank
and it's
you.
Not just in terms of weight loss. I just love, I love hearing about people's happiness
Happy
and improvements
ending.
In their lives. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean? And it's not just you, it's your whole family.
Yes.
And it's lovely.
Yeah.
Because we have to sometimes talk about negative stuff, but it's great to hear the flip side of it as well. So thanks, Julie.
Thank you so much for having me.
And continued happiness and health. All
Thank
right,
you.
That's Julie Gorman there. I just want to give you a final shout out of our Instagram competition. It's all on Instagram, by the way. So the competition is there. And the winner will be announced there. We've teamed up with Irwin Expert Electrical for a fantastic giveaway. We're giving one lucky winner the chance to win a Dyson OmniGlide vacuum cleaner. All you have to do is head over to Instagram to enter. Go to Highland Radio Donegal on Instagram. Follow the steps. The winner will be announced over on Instagram. And please, just while I'm talking about it, right, because there are people out there that are trying to exploit every situation, a fake Highland Radio A fake Highland Radio Instagram page has been established, okay? And they are exploiting, obviously, information that they see in the internet. They're private messaging people to tell them that they've won something and there is a link. Now, these private messages are item-specific, okay? So they might seem real. The prize, the competition, and the announcement all is at our official Instagram at Highland Radio Donegal. If you get any messages from any other Instagram page, please block them and report the page, because there's one there, I think it's called Highland Radio Donegal Official. It's a spam. There's not much we can do about it, unfortunately, because there are people out there looking to exploit all the while. But anyway, I don't want to confuse the message. Go on to our official Instagram page today, because the competition ends today. It's at Highland Radio Donegal. Follow the steps. We'll announce the winner on that page a little later on. So you can enter today, win today. How's that for you? All right, 08660 25000. A caller says, that's a great story. I wish that girl well indeed. So say all of us. Hi, Greg. Had the gastric sleeve in Turkey on the 25th of September. Have 6 stone, 4 pounds off. Whole new way of life, but the mental health side of things are my only negative. All right, okay. Were you assessed before that? What kind of supports are there? Maybe you want to tell us a little bit about it. You don't have to come on air even by email or text. Like, what are the challenges for you? Maybe we can point you in the right direction to get a bit of support in that area so that you're not struggling on your own. I appreciate you texting us, but I just don't want to leave it at that. If you feel very isolated in it, please give us some more info and we can try and maybe put you in contact with someone who you can chat to and talk some of that stuff through. I wonder, was it more difficult because you went to Turkey? Would it have been better if it had happened here? I don't know. I can't understand why anyone will put themselves in that situation, taking such drastic action, major surgery requiring medication and vitamins for life. I have a friend who had this done in Turkey. She was never chronically overweight. A changed lifestyle wouldn't have changed. We were out for lunch recently. She's unable to enjoy social occasions like this anymore. She got a pain in her stomach after nibbling a starter. But you see, the problem is, as you see, I think you might be of the view that people who are overweight just do it by choice, or they don't have willpower. Medical professionals who work in this area are adamant that this is a disease and should be treated as such. I understand where you're coming from, but maybe just try and understand a little bit more. Can you please ask that lady how much it cost to couple it in on that? She went private. It was 11 grand. Her life insurance, lucky enough to have that covered that. Greg, I shop at least in at least 5 different supermarkets, both large and small. I find both Simpsons and Aldi a first class with extra assistance if one needs it. Always with a smile and never making you feel a nuisance for asking, even for carrying heavy groceries to one's car. And I cannot praise them enough. And time for one more before we go. Do we listen? Loads of you texting in there about your nice experiences in shops and with service providers. I will get to them tomorrow because it's a nice positive note for Friday, isn't it? That is where we have to leave it. Listen, thanks to all of you who took part in the show, who listened to the programme. Those of you who watched it too, all very welcome. Back with you tomorrow, Friday panel, discussing all the big topics of the week. So stay tuned for that and the usual entertainment for you on a Friday. Enjoy the rest of your Thursday.